And once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, 87.9 FM on Post World Radio in Seattle, and 87.9 in Point Arena, California on Mojo Radio and on our website www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be speaking with Melody Ermachild Chavez, author of the new book, Mina, Heroine of Afghanistan, and we'll be discussing Mina's life and legacy and the founding of RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. Stand by, stay tuned for Rockin' the Boat, coming up next. The Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, or RAWA, is an independent, all-volunteer, nonviolent organization that calls for multilateral disarmament and the establishment of a secular democracy in Afghanistan where women may once again participate fully in public life. Founded in 1977 by Mina, a 20-year-old Kabul University student, the women of RAWA have stood up to all native and foreign oppressors with courage and principle. Though she was assassinated in 1987 at age 30, Mina's voice has never been silenced, and the important struggle for democracy and women's rights in Afghanistan lives on. RAWA opposed the Russian occupation of Afghanistan, and today they oppose all Islamic fundamentalist forces, including both the Taliban and those in the Northern Alliance. RAWA condemned the September 11th attacks as a barbaric act of violence and terror, opposed a U.S. military attack that has killed thousands of innocent Afghans, and expressed its sincere hope that the American people can differentiate between the people of Afghanistan and a handful of fundamentalist terrorists. While the Taliban have outlawed education for women beyond the second grade and denied them the few social services that exist in Afghanistan, RAWA secretly and under the threat of death provides schooling for girls and boys, as well as medical care and adult education for women. In neighboring Pakistan, RAWA provides Afghan refugees with AIDS, runs orphanages, and sponsors income-generating projects. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll talk about the founder of RAWA, Mina's troubled life, and the important work of RAWA. My guest is Melody Ermachild Chavez, a private investigator and the author of two books, Altars in the Streets and the recently published biography, Mina, Heroine of Afghanistan. The new book is a portrait of the courageous mother, poet, and leader who symbolizes an entire movement of women which dares to influence the fate of nations. It is also a riveting account of a singular political career whose legacy has been inherited by RAWA, the women who hold the keys to a peaceful future for Afghanistan. Melody Ermachild Chavez will read from her new book on Tuesday, September 16th, at the Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30 p.m., and she joins me now by telephone from her home in Berkeley, California. Thanks for being with us tonight, Melody Ermachild Chavez.
Thank you so much for a wonderful introduction about Mina and RAWA. That was excellent.
Thank you. Well, why don't we begin by having you tell our listeners exactly what inspired you to write about Mina's life?
Well, like most Americans, before September 11th, I really wasn't paying enough attention to Afghanistan. The Taliban did get my attention because I'm a Buddhist when, in March of 2001, they blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas, the tallest standing Buddhas in the world from the 3rd century BC. And that was just so awful, and I was aware of Afghan women. But I had no idea how entwined we are with their lives until September 11th happened, and I was writing a completely different book. Like a lot of writers, I felt like what I was working on just wasn't adequate to what had happened. And so I first found out about RAWA at their fantastic website, rawa.org, and there I saw a picture of the beautiful Mina, this young woman who founded RAWA. I wanted to read a book about her, and I couldn't believe it when I saw there was no book. And because I'm a private investigator and I investigate about my clients all the time who are almost all on death row, here in California I'm an abolitionist to the death penalty, and I write these social histories of my clients and go all over America and sometimes other countries looking into their backgrounds. I thought, well, I could write that book, maybe I could just do that as a gift for them. And they amazingly agreed to my offer. They accepted it. Just an act of trust, you know, on really from both of us. Women can sometimes do this kind of trusting act, especially, I guess, in a time of war. They said, yes, they would love me to undertake this project, and I am donating all of the author's proceeds from the book to their projects. And believe me, a dollar, even $1, goes a long way in their hospital where they give out free medicine to women and kids. And I went over there. I went to Pakistan and Afghanistan, where I interviewed 22 members of RAWA, including a number of the founders, people who knew Mina even when she was a teenager, who knew her mom, who's passed away, though, and her children, had known her husband, who also was assassinated. And I put together this book, which also brings together every known photo of her. And we're all happy. RAWA is so excited to finally have every single thing about their beautiful founder in one document.
It's more than just a biography that you write of Mina's life and the founding of RAWA, but your book also chronicles the rise of fundamentalist rule in Afghanistan. You describe the early years of Mina's life in Afghanistan and how the country was ruled by sort of a progressive king, mm-hmm. King Zahir, who you also describe as, quote, a lover of modern ideas and European culture. Then in 1972, King Zahir was overthrown in a bloodless coup. Maybe you can talk about the effects the new leader had on Afghanistan and how this rule kind of ushered in that fundamentalist era and the rise of Sharia law and the treatment of women.
Yes, well, it's hard for us now to imagine an Afghanistan at peace and one nation. Actually, Afghanistan was peaceful from 1920 when the British finally left there to 1979 when the Soviet tanks rolled into that country. But in between, and it was, as you said, sort of a modernizing constitutional monarchy all of the time Mina was growing up. And we should say she was born in 1957. Interestingly, the same year Osama bin Laden was born. And it's just interesting to think about the arc of these two very different lives intersecting in some ways. But she grew up in a time of peace and was one of the generation of young women learning so much. There were women lawyers, doctors, politicians, and women on the radio there. And then a big contradiction between the lives of the city women and the educated people and the lives of much more traditional people in the countryside who were poor. And Mina set out in founding RAWA to try to help women much less fortunate, bring health care and literacy to women. That was her original idea, kind of analogous in some ways to our civil rights movement, where students who were more privileged, you know, wanted to end segregation and joined into the movement for that, against segregation. But Afghanistan was destabilized in the Cold War, and that's something I don't think we pay enough attention to, the after effects of the Cold War we're living with now, because many nations, including Afghanistan, had coups and assassinations, elections overthrown, different governments leaning sometimes to the Soviet Union, sometimes toward the United States, and that's what happened to Afghanistan, where finally the Soviets invaded and occupied. They were responsible for so much of the destruction of Afghanistan, and the United States, in turn, funded and supported these warlords, who we call them warlords now, who were a very small faction when Mina was at the university, hardly had any credit at all, any credibility, but they became so powerful that they did manage to defeat the Soviets, but they also now were living with, you know, this very powerful armed force, six or seven different private armies, which had a civil war there, further destroyed the country, and then those were the roots also of the Taliban. A lot of it paid for by our tax money.
Yeah, that's true. Again, I'm speaking with Melody Ermachild Chavez, and she's the author of Mina, Heroine of Afghanistan. Melody, at age 12, Mina contacted typhoid and almost died. Maybe you can talk about how this experience shaped her later on in life.
Well, you know, I wondered so much why she was so extraordinary. She had not only a towering intelligence, but she was so determined and responsible and, you know, a charismatic person, such a leader. And I think looking into her life and trying to understand her, many people told me that something very important was when she did get typhoid fever and almost died. And she was 12. She was old enough to realize she might be dying. And when she survived it, she was so earnest and so much more serious. I think she actually decided, I've got to do something with my life. I've been given back my life, and I really want to make something of myself. And she was so determined to go to school. She wanted to be a lawyer. She hoped to be a judge and be able to make a difference to women's lives that way. She never was healthy, never was strong. She had epilepsy because of the high fevers and seizures she had had. So here is a woman, not strong, but so smart and so passionate and so charismatic. And she, for 10 years, she led RAWA against unbelievable odds. I mean, living with an assumed name, moving from place to place, walking in and out of Afghanistan, over to Pakistan, walking over the mountains many times. She was sort of like Harriet Tubman that way, I sometimes think, where she went back to bring out more girls and women to safety or to RAWA's schools she founded in Pakistan. Just a very brave person.
Some of the tribal customs in Afghanistan allow for men to take more than one wife, and Mina also had two mothers. She was also influenced, I believe, by reading your book, by the treatment of women, and at an early age, she saw the inequalities between the sexes there. Maybe you can talk a bit about some of her early experiences with inequality and how that sort of shaped the founding principles of RAWA.
Well, yes, like every society, there were class differences, some tribal differences. There were the Azara people who were sort of a lower class group. Often they acted as servants, and the Taliban actually slaughtered the Azara people, did a kind of ethnic cleansing of them, and that's one of the tragedies that happened. This is one reason why Mina founded RAWA, to be inter-ethnic, and we met members of RAWA who were different from different, their ancestors were from different tribes, I guess you'd say. And that was so impressive, and one reason why I would say they are so revolutionary. You know, they have revolutionary in their title, and it's definitely revolutionary to be, to act for interracial or inter-ethnic harmony in Afghanistan. But you shouldn't have I don't want your listeners to think that Afghans were fighting each other among the different ethnic groups before the Civil War, because they weren't. Our tax money went to fund these fundamentalist fanatics who were in Pakistan in exile, and they are the ones who formed private armies of their own, each one, and they did that along ethnic lines, and they really fomented a great deal of ethnic hatred between the groups inside Afghanistan, and that changed Afghanistan to where you do have, you know, there's a difference between tribal custom. Tribal custom was one thing that was not at all necessarily negative. It was conservative, yes, and ancient, and Afghans were progressing about that in their own way before all this destabilization happened. But fanaticism and ethnic hatred are not tribal custom. You know, those are something new that has been built up. An analogy in our country would be, say, if some outside force had funded and armed the Ku Klux Klan, for example, or the people around Timothy McVeigh who bombed the Oklahoma federal building. Some forces like that in our society don't really have a lot of legitimacy. But what if someone gave them millions and millions of dollars in all kinds of, you know, rocket-propelled grenades and bombs and things to the point where they could actually start a civil war in this country? That is what happened to Afghanistan. And the beliefs of these men, including al-Qaeda and all of those warlords, have just as little to do with Islam, with the gentle and loving and hospitable tradition of Islam, as, say, the Ku Klux Klan or has to do with the teachings of Martin Luther King Jr. among Christians.
It's an interesting analogy. So,
yes, I mean, you need to have kind of cultural relativism to think about it and try to imagine how we would feel if something like that had happened to us, you know. And when I was in Afghanistan, the people I interviewed there would say, these men, these warlords, are America's children, and the father has come now to discipline his children. They said America created these people, and they really have nothing to do with Afghanistan. So they had a very interesting perspective I never heard here. I learned that going there. Mina, you know, saw this happening. She moved to Pakistan in 1982. She was driven into exile once the Soviets identified her as someone working very much against the Soviet occupation. And she moved to Pakistan, and Osama bin Laden moved there too in 1982. Mina was founding schools that were teaching democracy, democratic values, and secular values, and working against hatred of women, while our tax money and the Saudi royal family also was funding madrasas, these schools that were teaching thousands of boys to hate people of other ethnic groups, to hate Americans, to be for hatred of women. And her question always was, why were these men chosen to receive all of this aid? Why don't the countries of the world support democratic forces in Afghanistan?
Despite the fact that Rawa was an organization by and for women only, they also had a lot of male supporters. But the organization Rawa was also in support of national liberation for Afghanistan. Maybe you can talk a little more about that.
Well, when tanks roll into your country, you know, and you're just standing by the road watching that happening, you have to decide what you're going to do about that. And you can either think, well, each and every person, you know, has to think, I'll get along, I'll survive somehow, or I will fight against this. Think of what I can do to throw these invaders out of my country. Well, when it happened to Afghanistan, Mina and the other leaders of Rawa thought, well, we want to work for women, but we are going to have to also oppose this occupation. And they found a lot of creative, nonviolent ways of doing that, and they also supported the men who were fighting, who were democratic forces. They did not support the warlords. They did their best to free Afghanistan from the occupation.
Can you talk about, in some detail, some of the programs that they put forward? You write about a magazine that they put out called Women's Message, Payam-e-Zan.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe talk a bit about that and how they were able to distribute this and the clandestine nature of the Rawa's organizing.
Well, Mina was so smart to found Rawa in a way that it could survive attack right from the beginning. And they had small circles that would meet and in secret at each other's houses. They just seemed like, you know, women getting together to have a cup of tea, and these were their meetings where they would decide on what to do to teach women to read and write at the beginning or bring education to women, and those really served them once the Soviets came and the fundamentalists rose. You know, you have to see them sort of crushed between these two really murderous forces, both of them trying to destroy them. So one thing they thought of they could do is have a little magazine, and it's just mimeographed. Remember mimeographing? And they made little drawings on there. I brought back a number of the earliest copies that had articles written by Mina herself, and we translated them. Some of them, her poems were in there, and other women wrote it. Now they still have it. during the Taliban, they made a small little version of it that they could smuggle more easily. So they definitely put the burqa to use, you know, this big shroud that women were forced to wear. They used that to hide not only women's message, but video cameras, and they are the women who documented the human rights abuses of the Taliban. They made the film of women being executed in the stadium under the Taliban mm-hmm. and smuggled that out, and it was that footage was in the movie Beneath the Veil, shown after September 11th quite a bit on TV. They were just very, very brave. I put quite a lot of their smuggling methods in the book, and I remember asking them by email as a kind of follow-up. I said, oh, well, what are some other examples of how you got over the border and how you smuggled things? And they said, well, you know, we really still are using a lot of these methods, so we better not put them all in the book, you know. And the book itself is like an internet miracle, you know. It couldn't have happened without being able to email. And also we would phone, and my translator would be on the phone with me to do all the final research.
You're tuned again to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name's the V-Man, and my guest tonight is Melody Ermachild Chavez. She's a private investigator and author of the new biography titled Mina, Heroine of Afghanistan. Melody Ermachild Chavez will be reading from her new book tomorrow, Tuesday, September 16th, at the Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30 p.m. And we have about, looks like, 7 minutes left. Maybe we can kind of wrap up. Maybe you can talk a bit about Mina's death. She is known as the heroine of Afghanistan. Tell us how it was she died. She was assassinated.
Yes, she was killed when she was 30 in 1987. She's been dead for 16 years. And, you know, at first she just disappeared. She didn't come one day when she was supposed to come to see the seamstresses in their workshop they run. Later, they found out what happened to her, and that they had to identify her just by a ring that was on her finger. So it's very sad, and you know, it was very moving to me to interview the women who met afterwards and had to face the whole situation and to decide whether to go on without her. And they decided to go on, and they've done nothing but grow and found more schools. They now have reopened their hospital. It closed, sadly, when Afghanistan was completely forgotten between 1995. After the Soviets left in 1989, America, for one thing, we completely forgot them. Yeah. But the world forgot them until after September 11th. And now, ironically, they have reopened the hospital, which I visited. It's hard to think of a different way things could have happened, you know, in the last 2 years. But all this time, Rawa has had a different vision, you know, and it's the vision of really millions of people around the world who are part of this movement for the civil society and the rule of law. At the very beginning, after September 11th, they asked that a war not start, but then instead the attacks be prosecuted internationally as crimes against humanity rather than as a call to war. And that is just exactly what Mary Robinson, the United Nations Commissioner for Human Rights, was asking for. They've also asked that the warlords be captured and disarmed and tried for war crimes. They are war criminals. And so, you know, they constantly hold up a vision of a different way our world could be. And that's why I rely on them so much, the website, and, you know, they're really smart political leaders. They are like hundreds of other women leading the fight worldwide against the bad things about globalization, the fight against war. They understand that war is obsolete completely and can't be used to settle differences. I think they're wonderful leaders. And if Mina were living, you know, she would only be 46 years old. And I think she'd be another Arundhati Roy, mm-hmm. another Mary Robinson, these women's voices we need so badly.
Mina looked up to a radical poet early on in life named Saidal Sukhandin. I hope I'm mm-hmm. saying that right. He was executed by some of these radical Islamists, one man named Hekmatyar, who later came to be a tribal warlord. But this this poet influenced her beliefs and solidified her resolve to continue her work and inspired Mina to write some of her own poetry. Maybe in the final moments we have, we could bring in Mina's voice. There's a rare recording of her voice reading a poem in her native tongue. It's called I Shall Never Return. So I'll bring that up, and maybe you can do a translation for us.
منظرم شده در بیدار گشتم از خاکستر اجساد سرخی کودکانم برخواستم و توفان گشتم.
The title is I Shall Never Turn Back by Mina. I'm the woman who has awakened. I've risen and become a tempest through the ashes of my burnt children. I've risen from the rivulets of my brother's blood. My nation's wrath has empowered me. My ruined and burnt villages fill me with passion against the enemy. No longer think of me as weak and incapable. I'm the woman who has awakened. I've found my path and will never turn back.
And again, I'm speaking tonight with Melody Irma-Child Chavez. She's the author of Mina, Heroine of Afghanistan. And you can get this book through museumfire.com. www.museumfire.com. Melody Irma-Child Chavez will be speaking tomorrow, Tuesday, September 16th, at the Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30 p.m., and you'll be there to sign copies as well. We just have a couple minutes left, so maybe you can talk a bit about, you mentioned Rawa continues to this day, but what is your view of what's happening in Afghanistan now? I mean, the Taliban's been ousted. It's been 2 years since the U.S.-led assault there. And we're seeing a resurgence of some of these Islamist warlords, and the fighting goes on. What do you think is going to bring about peace in the region there?
Well, the policy, I cannot really defend the U.S. policy there. I do not understand why we are allowing Afghanistan once again to just slide back into being a place where terrorism can fester. The war is still going on there, just as it is in Iraq. The warlords are in power. They've took off their warlord outfits and put on business suits, and they're called the regional governors. Our tax money is by and large going through them. Now they're saying the $87 billion is for Iraq and Afghanistan. It's not really very much. It's $86 billion for Iraq and $1 billion for Afghanistan. And we now understand a lot of that is just going to be made for building highways from Kabul to the U.S. bases. And so we need to change our policy. This is a country that has a very wonderful history and culture and resilient and loving and wonderful people. It's a place we could have, actually, as they tried to talk about Iraq, it is a place that we could have put a lot of resources to build a good government and a good place in the Muslim world. And we haven't yet really made that commitment. And I hope that we do, and Rawa hopes that we do. They have not given up peace, hope of peace and a good future, and so there's no reason for us to give up. If they haven't, they are just going right on, you know, with their work. I'm so inspired by these women, and I really support them. I think I recommend going to their website to be uplifted by their courage.
And that website is www.rawa.org. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your time tonight, Melody Irma-Child Chavez, and you again will be tomorrow signing books tomorrow at the Capitola Book Cafe, September 16th at 7:30 p.m. And again, people should purchase this book because all the author's proceeds will go to the Rawa organization and their wonderful programs helping orphan children and women in the borderlands of Pakistan and Afghanistan. We're out of time. I appreciate you being with us tonight, Melody.
Thank you so much. I just really send my appreciation to your listeners for their continued interest in Afghanistan. Thank you.
And we'll continue to update listeners in future programs on the situation there. And that's going to wrap it up for me tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. Tomorrow, I'll be playing a talk by Jim Hightower. He spoke over the weekend at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and we were lucky enough to get a recording from that. So tune in again from 5:30 to 6 o'clock for another edition of Rockin' the Boat.